Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Crime and Tea, Episode 4. Thank you so much for joining me here today. I hope you're ready for some crazy stuff. Today, I'll be going into a few more recent unsolved serial killer cases. In the description, I will leave links to the tip lines or county phone numbers, if possible, in cases you may have any information on, since they are still unsolved. So without further ado, grab your tea, coffee, or something cozy, and let's get into it. First case we will be looking at is the West Mesa murders, aka the West Mesa Bone Collector. These murders took place between 2001 and 2006. There are at least 19 girls and women that have disappeared from the streets of Albuquerque, New Mexico. The West Mesa area is very desolate, hosting only a shooting range, speedway, and the Bernalillo County Metropolitan Detention Center. One thing that was not suspected was a mass grave where the bodies of 11 decomposed corpses were found buried in shallow graves. In February of 2009, a resident of the area was walking her dog when she made an awful discovery. She witnessed a bone that looked like a femur that was sticking up out of the ground. Christina Ross took a picture of the exposed bone and sent it to her sister, who was a nurse. She proceeded to call the police when she verified her suspicion. The police swiftly went to work and discovered that it wasn't just the one body, but 11, which is just incomprehensible to have just stumbled upon a mass grave like this.
Yeah, she got something to do with it. How do you know that was a human bone?
She didn't have anything to do with it.
She's walking around and see a bone, and the first thought isn't, that's a large animal. And walk away. No, we got to take pictures. Yo, sis, this is a bone? This human?
Hey, at least she investigated. You know, what would have happened if she just wrote it off? It would have just laid there. It would have just been there.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would have ever found it. Sometimes it's a good thing to be nosy, okay?
Never a good thing to be nosy, but moving on.
Sometimes it is. So it took 2 weeks before all 11 bodies were uncovered and nearly a year to actually identify the individuals. It was a huge 92-acre stretch of land that was owned by a home developer. So, if not for this woman, who knows when they would have been found otherwise. The ages for the victims spanned between 15 to 32, with the majority of the victims being Hispanic, with the exception of one African-American woman. All but one of the victims were known sex workers. Of the 11 victims, 22-year-old Gina Michelle Valdez had been 4 months pregnant. The 11th victim was 15-year-old Jamie Barilla, who had been reported missing by her mother in 2004. She had left the house with her cousin and planned to be back in just a few minutes as she had left her curling iron on. Her 27-year-old cousin, Evelyn Salazar, was identified 2 months prior. The second 15-year-old, Celania Edwards, was a runaway from Lawton, Oklahoma. She was the only African-American victim and the only non-local. The other victims' names are as follows. Monica Candelera, 22. Veronica Romero, 28. Victoria Chavez, 26. Doreen Marquez, 24. Virginia Cloven, 24. Julie Netto, 24, and Cinnamon Elks, 32. It was said to be the most horrific case that Albuquerque had ever seen. The police quickly got to work on the case, stating it was a top priority. They got a team of detectives, FBI profilers, and were coordinating with law enforcement through the entire state. However, it was soon realized solving these cases was much more difficult a task. There was very little evidence to go on. The cause of death for all of the victims was homicidal violence. However, the medical examiners and forensic experts were unable to establish a true cause of death. There were no witnesses and no forensic evidence to go on. The only reason they were linked at all was because of the mass burial site and the same line of work for most. Unfortunately, this caused the case to go unsolved all these years later. Although the case remains unsolved, there were two possible suspects: Joseph Blay and Lorenzo Montoya. Blay, 61, is currently serving a 90-year prison sentence for sexual assaults unrelated to the West Mesa case. Lorenzo Montoya was the more primary of the suspects, who lived 1 to 2 miles from the burial site. He has an evident history of violence against women and soliciting women for sex. In December of 2006, Montoya met 19-year-old Sharika Hill in an online chat room. Upon meeting with Sharika Hill, he strangled and killed her. Sharika's sex trafficker, Frederick Williams, followed Montoya to his home, where he found Montoya attempting to transport her body. Williams proceeded to shoot and kill Montoya after the disappearances stopped.
Okay, so he did.
Maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but we don't know for sure.
I mean, he got caught in the act, and someone shot him, so...
Well, I mean, that wasn't necessarily in the act. This was quite some time after these things. It could have just been a completely unrelated case, because we don't really have an MO for the girls that were buried, so there's really no... link there. I mean, there's definitely suspicion because it is near and close, and you know, the possibility
it's near,
is
it's
there.
Close. It falls into the same guidelines as a victim that they know about. I'm going with that right now.
Okay. Well, you can feel however you want to feel.
Can't solve it because it's dead, but.
There are currently still 8 missing women who disappeared in 2003, 2005, and 2006. Those women and the ages they disappeared are Vanessa Reed, 24, Chantal Waits, 29, Jillian Ortiz Henderson, 19, Leah Pebbles, 23, Nina Heron, 21, Martha Luker, 32, Felipe Gonzalez, 23, and Anna Vigil, 20. These women are still missing, and there are still people out there missing them. At this point, unless someone with knowledge of the murder steps forward, it is seemingly impossible to solve these cases. In July of 2018, they thought that they had found more victims nearby. A construction crew stumbled upon other human remains. The bodies were investigated by the State Office of the Medical Investigator, and they determined the bodies were unrelated. It was said they were likely Native American bones, so this didn't really help. Well, it wasn't a construction site. It was just an empty lot at this point.
That they were doing stuff.
Well, yeah, they didn't really get to do anything yet.
Yeah. Because now it's haunted and everybody runs away.
Not necessarily. In recent years, Eleanor Grego did an interview at her South Valley home. She was the mother of Julie Neto, one of the girls discovered at the Mesa. She recalled an instance in 2009 while she was having breakfast at a local McDonald's where she overheard a conversation that said the women were getting what they deserved. My dad was there. Quote, my dad was there and he got up and told them, one of those kids was my granddaughter. They got up and took off right away. At the time of Neto's disappearance, her son was just 3 years old in 2004 and was around 8 or 9 when her body was found. He is now an adult in his 20s. He does carry the weight, but he refuses to talk about it, she said. He doesn't want to know nothing about it. He wants to live a normal life. That sucks. But nobody...
After you've moved on, you don't want to bring it up or find out new details of it because then it's just opening up old wounds.
Yeah, I know. It's just... So women on the streets back then remembered a long period of fear when the other women began to disappear. That fear surged again when the women's bodies were discovered. Christy Lopez, a woman who worked alongside two of the victims, Evelyn Salazar and Cinnamon Elk, said, it hit me really hard, especially when I got sober. I had suppressed my emotions for so long that could have been me. I could have been that girl that jumped in that car. Lopez has moved on from her life on the streets, but still worries for the very vulnerable women still on the street. The serial killings made Christine Barber, who is the executive director of the nonprofit Street Safe New Mexico, make it her objective to keep these women who are selling sex, addicted to drugs, or living on the streets some sort of safety net. Barber said, that horror I felt when I realized that those 11 women went missing, all of us, the entire community, didn't even notice. We weren't even told. And if we were told, we didn't pay attention until their bodies were found. Barbara had recalled, I happened to be sitting with another group of volunteers when the news had broken about the murders. And one of the women there, Cindy Jaramillo, said she knew all too well what was going on. Back in 1999, Cynthia Vigil Jaramillo was supporting herself through sex work when she was kidnapped by none other than David Parker Ray, the well-known serial killer, aka the Toy Box Killer. She was imprisoned in this trailer, located in Elephant Butte, a city south of Albuquerque. He had already tortured and murdered as many as 40 women, and if she hadn't escaped and notified the police, the same fate would have been hers. She knew very well that if she didn't escape from him, which she did after 3 days, no one was going to report her missing, and no one was really going to pay any attention to her disappearance, just like the West Mesa cases. She now sits on the board of directors for Safe Streets New Mexico. StreetSafe keeps track of these women and makes note if anyone hasn't been seen recently. They distribute a bad guys list with a brief info on men who have been said to have assaulted, raped, or robbed the women on these streets. Barbara also stated, "I can tell you now who's missing and who isn't. At the moment, we probably only reach a quarter of the women who are out there. But with any luck, if it was to happen again, we could at least sound the alarm." Which I think is kind of cool. I mean, you know that these women are in some extenuating circumstances and, you know, not the best line of work, but at least there's somebody there to have their back, because nobody deserves to go out in any sort of manner that is not natural causes. There is still a room that is strictly dedicated to the investigation. The walls have dry erase boards all over the place, photographs, stacks of documents, and filing cabinets. It is still considered an active case at this point. They still follow up on any tips, leads, or any info, and they don't hesitate to go out to West Mesa whenever anything suspicious is reported. It is said that the APD still gets about 1,000 tips a year and is still very actively investigating, even if it's a little slow-moving. There have been many technological advances over the years, and the department continues sending evidence for DNA testing. Lieutenant Scott Norris is currently in charge of the investigating unit and said, "As this technology grows and becomes better, we can resubmit things for testing that earlier technology may not have picked up on." I mean, they have their bones. I'm not really sure if they have, like, any clothing items or anything like that. It didn't really go into, like, if there was anything found with the bodies, but it just...
Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't really know. It doesn't really give you... Because it's still technically an active investigation, so they can't really... Yeah. He cannot stress enough that every bit of evidence is important, no matter how insignificant it may seem. He says there's no tip that's insignificant. The littlest thing could lead to a break in the case. There are no lulls in the investigation. These women have been laid to rest and reburied under simple gravestones at cemeteries around the city. City officials and families have built a memorial park where the bodies were discovered. Mayor Tim Keller said, "The way it was designed, the family input is just such an important part of building a city that is a reflection of us, and sometimes it's a reflection of tragedies that have happened."
They built a park.
Okay.
It's just a memorial. It's just to remember them.
Yeah, I just don't think people... Well, I mean, I understand that they're trying to remember the people found there.
I get what you're saying, because the other bones were found there. But I feel like they were probably relocated. I did not look into that, but I guess I could take a peek at that and see what happened with the bones. But I'm pretty sure that they probably went to a museum or something of the sort, or even if they just got reburied and relocated properly.
Fair enough.
But they wouldn't just go over the bones. They found them, so they'd take them out of the ground.
I don't think that I would be okay with building a memorial of raped women on top of where they were found their bodies.
I mean, it's just to bring awareness, really, at this point. You know, it's more so like, don't forget about this. So this happened. Remember that this happened and make sure it doesn't happen again.
Okay.
The city councilor, Clarissa Penna, said of the efforts to establish the park that it was a long haul for the families. Penna also stated the family members are the ones who have come together and they designed this park. They did the markers, they picked the family members' trees to represent their loved ones. The other trees planted in the park are to represent other vulnerable women still out in the community. A blessing and prayers took place at the opening of the park. Roman Catholic Deacon Juan Barajas said the area had gone from a place of suffering, pain, and death, instead to a reminder of how precious life is. Christine Ross and her dog, Ruka, also made the trip to be at the cemetery. Ross said she thought it to be divine intervention that led them there to help bring your loved ones home. She also said that it's always going to be part of me. I think about whoever did this horrible crime. Are they ever going to be caught? Are they still alive? The Memorial Park had a few hiccups on its journey to completion, but was finally completed in 2020. Anyone that has any info on the West Mesa murders or the other 8 missing women is urged to contact the Albuquerque Police Department, 118th Street Task Force. You can call 1-877-765-8273 or 505-768-2450 or Crime Stoppers at 505-843-STOP. No tip is too small, so if you know anyone with any information, don't hesitate to call. Our next case is a bit unorthodox in that we know who the killer is, but he is still on the loose. This killer takes us over to Colombia and was born October 8, 1948. Pedro Alonso Lopez was born in Santa Isabel to his father, Medardo Reyes, who was killed in the La Valencia, a 10-year civil war in Colombia. His mother was Benilda Lopez de Castende, a prostitute at the time who was pregnant with Lopez. Pedro was the 7th of approximately 13 children.
That's a lot of fucking kids.
Everybody had a lot of kids back then. Especially, she was a prostitute. Like, she wasn't, there was no birth control. They were just doing their thing. You got pregnant, mm-hmm. You got pregnant. You had the baby, you had the baby. Who said you had to take care of them? In Pedro's early life, his mother claimed to be caring and loving. However, on the contrary, Pedro paints a very different picture. She was cruel and very abusive, raising Lopez. Lopez also claimed that he actually watched his mother have sex with clients as a small child, and that on occasion she would let them hit her. And, like, no shame on your game or whatever you're doing, because, you know, you do you, you know, whatever you need to do. But have the wherewithal to know that your children should not be present for any of that business.
Yeah. That should go without saying.
I know, but you know, obviously it didn't, because obviously we were just doing whatever. So at the mere age of 8 years old, Benilda caught Lopez molesting his younger sister. Now, I heard molesting, there was just fondling, like, a breast, which, I mean, I at that point, like, I don't even, like, it was just her chest. So I don't even know, like, what really happened, but something happened between him and his sister that resulted in his mother kicking him out of the house. At eight years old. She drove him approximately 200 miles away and just told him to get out. It could not possibly be her fault for, you know, letting him watch her do these things with these men. You know, he's 8. He's just learning about life. He has no idea what's going on. Not condoning any of this, but, you know. What do? Where'd he go? We're just all alone at this point. So Lopez would be forced to live as a beggar on the streets for only a few days when he was approached by a man who seemed to have some sympathy towards him and his circumstances. He promised the young, desperate, and hungry boy that he could come to stay with him, that he had food and a warm bed for him. Lopez followed the man. To his dismay, the man had tricked him and brought him to an abandoned building where he was repeatedly sodomized and promptly returned him to the streets. Yeah. Yeah, he's got some real shitty luck. We'll just leave it at that, because I just have no words. Lopez had apparently vowed at the time of the attack that he would do the same to as many little girls as he could. After this incident, Lopez was very weary of strangers and typically hid during the day, only coming out at night to find food. Within the same year, Pedro decided to move out of Tolima and move to Bogota, Maybe that's it. That sounds right. Bogota? Yeah. Whilst there, an American couple had come across this thin and malnourished boy on the street, and they decided they would take him home with them. They enrolled Lopez in a school for orphans, and he lived with them for the next few years. Unfortunately, in his time at this school, it was said that he was molested by one of the teachers at the school. I'm telling you, he's just got the shit end of every stick. So that ended that small reprieve, and that ended that small reprieve he'd had. He was 12, and so he ran away. Lopez had later stated again he wanted revenge for all of his suffering as a child. You know, I mean, I can understand why he's so angry at the world, but I do not condone his actions. There's a way to handle things, and that is not how to handle things. He did not handle things well. But I mean, then again, he never learned how to handle things well, because nobody guided him in life. He just had to try and figure it out all on his own. So at this point, Lopez had no real education or basic skills to work. So he turned to robbing and begging on the streets. He then moved up to stealing cars because the money that he would sell the cars for at the chop shops would give him a good sum. At the age of 18, he was arrested and sent to jail for car theft. After only a few days in prison, he was gang raped by what is said to be 3 to 4 men. Yeah. So this caused Lopez to rage. He was infuriated that these men did these things to him. He then vowed that he would never let himself be violated ever again. Lopez went out for revenge. He managed to make a makeshift shiv and went after the men. It is said he managed to kill 3 of the 4 men, if it was actually 4. According to certain sources, it states he may or may not have received an additional 2 years to his term. The acts were deemed as self-defense on his part, so they didn't pursue things any further.
Okay. I was about to ask why he get out of way with killing 3 guys and only got 2 years extended.
Yeah. I mean, it's a foreign country, first off, so their laws, especially at this time, back then, like, they didn't have the laws and rules and regulations that I'm not really sure of all of the laws and rules and regulations even as of now. I mean, I can't imagine that they're as bad as they were, but I don't suspect that they are fantastic either. But while in prison, Lopez had time to look back on the life he'd led to this point. It quite honestly enraged him thinking about it and the treatment he'd been given by his own mother. He browsed pornographic magazines to deal with his desires. Between the porn and his visions of his prostitute mother, he grew to absolutely despise women altogether. He hated her, and he hated them, and it was this rage that fueled him in the future. He's not a happy camper. Nope, nope, nope.
No one would be a happy camper in his shoes.
Nope, nope, nope. I feel bad for him. But I don't feel bad for him as the person he became, unfortunately. By 1978, Lopez was released and moved to Peru, where he began kidnapping, raping, and killing young Peruvian girls. He was said to do this about 3 times a week. 3 times a week. He had really no victim profile other than them looking innocent. Like, he just saw an opportunity and went with it.
Predator.
Yeah. He was an angry, rage-fueled person at this point in his life. He is done trying to be nice, trying to just live and be on his own. He's just angry at everyone and everything. He was actually caught by a group of indigenous people known as the Ayachucos. There we go. Who tortured him, buried him up to his neck in sand, as they planned to pour syrup on his head and let him be eaten alive by ants.
At that point, he probably did something to deserve.
Well, yeah, they found him, like, doing this to their people. So before he could be consumed, though, an American missionary convinced the tribe to let Lopez go and turn him over to the Peruvian police. Cha-ching. There are two versions of his deportation. One is that the missionary simply took him to the border and let him go free from there. The other is he was promptly deported by the Peruvian police back to his home country of Colombia without a real thought as to the nature of his crimes and the danger he possessed or posed to the society as a whole. I don't understand. Like, I don't know if she just, like, went into the village and, like, didn't really, like, know what they were talking about, and she didn't really know, like, how to mediate the situation, but she was just like, yeah, I'll take care of this. You don't need to kill him, just because she was, like, worried about them killing him. But, like, he's a bad guy. This boy, he's a bad guy. After this, Lopez would travel between Colombia and Ecuador as he abducted, raped, and killed more girls on his way. The police at the time were assuming that the girls were being abducted by slavery and prostitution rings. There was a flash flood that occurred in 1979 near Ambato, Ecuador, where four of the missing children were found. A few days later, Lopez attempted to abduct a 12-year-old named Maria Poveda at a market in Ambato. He failed, though, and was caught by the young girl's mother, who, with the help of other women, was almost lynched on the spot. However, Lopez was rescued by the police officers who he proclaimed to be a, quote, good person and that he had a clean heart.
Is that what the cops said?
No, that is what Lopez was telling the police when they were trying to arrest him. I am a good person. I have a clean heart. I know I've raped all these women, but I am a good person. So upon being detained, Lopez had a pretty standard interrogation until the officers learned that Lopez was not Ecuadorian, but a Colombian drifter. One of the lieutenants then beat him and accused him of being part of a gang abducting girls from Ambato. He was threatened that if he didn't confess, he'd be killed. However, he remained silent. This is when the officer's superior, Captain Pastor Cordova, stepped in and told the other officers to leave and decided to interrogate him on his own. He basically played a good cop in the situation, offering Lopez cigarettes and asking about his health and feelings before proceeding with the interrogation about the gang. Lopez simply shrugged, stating he knew nothing about that, which is not a lie.
Probably true.
He was not in a gang. Just so this guy right here in front of you. Oh, it's good. So the captain then explains that he's under immense pressure from the families of the missing girls, to which Lopez tells him, you can find one of the victims in a cabin outside of town. Sure enough, upon going to the cabin, they did indeed find the nude dead body of a young girl named Inova Jacome lying on an old mattress. At this point, Cordova asked Lopez how many girls he'd killed. Lopez looked upward and stated, over 200 in Ecuador, some tens in Peru, and many more in Colombia. Just let it seep in.
There's nothing to seep in about that. They should have let that mom lynch him.
Yeah, he should have. There should have been a lot of things that happened that didn't happen. He told them he would look for innocent-looking girls on the street, and he would then lure them away with a promise of gifts. He confessed that he would bring the girls to pre-prepared graves, which sometimes already had victims in them. He was said to have calmed the girls with reassuring words through the night. And trigger warning here. Once sunrise hit, he would rape and strangle them to satisfy his sexual needs as he watched their eyes fade out. It was also said that he didn't kill at night because he could not see his victims' eyes. He felt if he couldn't see the eyes, the murder was a waste. Speechless. I know. Yep. There's a lot of things not right in there. So he then went on to tell them he would have tea parties and play games with the deceased girls' bodies. He'd prop them upright in their graves and talk to them, convincing himself that his little friends enjoyed his company. With this, he became bored fairly quickly because they were obviously unresponsive and he'd be off to find another victim. He told the investigators, "I lost my innocence at age 8, so I decided to do the same to as many young girls as I could."
I'm waiting for the part to see how this guy got away. Because...
yeah.
Nothing about this says you should be on the streets.
They informed the president of the information, and Lopez was ordered to take them to the places where he had left the bodies until all of the Ecuadorian victims were recovered. Police were only able to locate the bodies of 57 of the young girls between weather and animal disturbances, but it was said he confessed to 110. However, he eventually stopped cooperating with the police, and they just went off what they had. And he claimed they'd be responsible for some other 200 deaths in neighboring counties of Peru and Colombia. July 31st, 1981, 33-year-old Lopez pled guilty to the 57 murders and was put into Ambato prison. He was officially diagnosed as a sociopath at this facility as well. He was sentenced to a mere 16 years in prison because at the time, this was the max sentencing.
Wait a minute. 16, I don't know how that breaks down to.
Yeah.
What's that, like 3 months for a body?
Sure. I am not the math person, Ronald. You are the math person.
It's fucking nuts. No wonder people were just out there killing people. No wonder y'all had a gang problem with people were kidnapping other people. Because like, even if they got caught. Yeah, I did it. All right, Grandma, I'll see you for Christmas. I go to jail for a little while. I kidnapped 19 girls and I'm fucking going down for 10 months. See you in Christmas.
So...
crazy. Confessed.
Yeah.
Here's a silver platter with all these bodies that I've killed.
Yep. And we're gonna let go.
He's not even getting a year per body.
No.
And that's not even including the ones they couldn't find. That was only the one of the ones that they could find.
Yep. Sad situation. I told you, their justice system is just not in order up there. Ecuador leader changed...
What happened to an eye for an eye? I know he ain't got that many eyes, but how about a bullet? A bullet for everybody.
Then he'd be dead.
I think I solved the problem there.
I don't think they have like a death penalty, and I think that was the other thing is that they just that was it. That was the big boy.
Okay.
That was you did a bad thing. Bad. So Ecuador later changed the max sentencing to 25 years because that's significantly better than, I mean, it is better than 16, but 25 is still not comparable.
That's for one murder. Like, the max sentence should go for one murder.
Yeah,
like,
no, that's not.
You get caught for multiple, that should be able to, like, all right, we're going to compound this all together. He should be in jail till his bones turn to dust.
Nope. So, after only 14 years in prison, 14 years, on August 31st, 1994, Lopez was released from Garcia Moreno Prison. He got out early for good behavior. Not this time round. Nope. Nobody messed with him this time.
I guess after you've already killed 300 other people when they release you, I guess they just left
him
alone.
Yeah, they don't mess with him. He's a big bad guy. He was, and actually, you know, if you look at pictures of him, he's such a scrawny looking, like, he looks so sickly. Like, he just does not.
It's always the people that you least expect.
Yeah, it truly is. He was then deported to Colombia, where the authorities attempted to convict him of 2-decade-old murders, but instead ruled Lopez to be insane. Lopez then went into a psychiatric facility in 1995. Come February of 1998, Lopez was declared sane, and with a $50 bail and some additional stipulations, was released yet again.
$50.
$50. Yep. Yep. So his stipulations were to continue receiving psychiatric treatment and reporting himself to the police every month. Shockingly, he never did either of these things. The news of his release caused panic in Ecuador, and he was said to have been seen... Lock your doors, lock your windows, stay inside.
That's not what happened.
Don't go anywhere.
That's not what happened. They're only handing out fucking 3 months for a body. I'll go kill this guy and I'll see y'all on fucking my birthday. Hey, what's up, people?
It's all good.
They might let you out. They might let you get away with that one. Like, you know what? You did us a favor. Now we don't have to check with him every fucking month. Look at his stupid face.
He was said to have been seen in the northern part of the country around this time. This was never actually confirmed. He was next seen in El Espinal when he went to visit his impoverished mother, Benilda. She thought he was going to kill her because in a televised interview, he blamed her for every pain in his heart. Lopez calmly told her to kneel because he wanted to give her his blessing. He then demanded his inheritance in life, telling her he couldn't sustain himself. She gave him a few bills and an old bed for Lopez to sell for parts. She would not see him again after this, and to this day, his whereabouts are unknown. Come 2002, an Interpol order of arrest was put out for Lopez by the Colombian police. They had a new murder in El Espinal that fit Lopez's M.O. Rumor speculated he is living in Tolima Department, Colombia, as a homeless man in Bogota. It's also said that he may have been murdered after the relatives of the victims put a bounty out on him. For the time being, he is presumed to still be at large. It is obviously unknown if he is still killing, but it wouldn't be surprising if he was. That is the story of Pedro Lopez, the monster of the Andes.
It would be surprising if he still was.
If he was.
Yeah, yeah. Because if all those people, he confessed to hundreds of murders.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's hundreds of families that want to watch you burn. If he's still alive...
I mean, he'd be in his 70s at this point. So, I mean, it's definitely possible if he was not killed or, you know, died or whatever the case may be. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, he hid on the streets for years. I mean, and he's probably so unrecognizable if he is still living on the streets that, you know, it's definitely a possibility.
I hope somebody killed him.
Yeah, he had no chance in life. He was given a shitty deck of cards and... He could not make anything out of it. And it was a sad existence.
Yeah. For all parties.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Him, his family, kind of, sort of, because they had to deal with the aftermath of, like, that craziness.
All these bodies is
oh, yeah. Married, and like, all of these families. The amount of families. That he had impacted.
They caught him and chopped him up and fed him animals.
Maybe they did. You never know.
We can hope for the
they live in the jungle. Things happen. He could have gotten caught by some other indigenous tribe and they got away with it this time. So, thanks so much for joining us here today on Crime and Tea for these crazy, unsolved, and at-large murder cases. It was definitely a crazy, windy road to get here. I am unsure of the info for any tips and such for the Lopez case, but I am sure they have some sort of tip line. However, who really knows if he's still alive, but the possibility exists. All the sources will be linked down below, as usual, and if you'd like to send me an email, you can do so at crimeandteapodcast@gmail.com. You can also head over to our Instagram and give us a follow to get case-related pictures and links. We had a great tea sesh. Till next time's tea, bye-bye!
Later.